You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
When has a friendship crossed the line and become something more than a friendship? When has there been a change in a relationship with somebody outside of your marriage that may have created problems within your marriage because of the emotional power, the emotional connection that's in that relationship? I'm not talking about physical affairs today. I want to talk about emotional affairs and what that's about and how to define it and also how to deal with it. This is Lee Baucom, and you're with us on the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is a weekly podcast where we try to bring you the best information to help you transform your marriage. And not every marriage that people listen for are on the brink of divorce or disaster, but you can always save your marriage, even when it's a pretty good marriage, to make sure that it never does get into trouble, to make sure that you're always moving forward with it, learning new skills, new growth points, and that's what we're here to do. So today I want to talk about that very slippery concept of what is the definition, what entails an emotional affair. When does just a friendship become emotional infidelity? Now, this is an interesting question because it's not so clear-cut. It's a very gray area for many people, and so it's hard to define. We kind of slip into it without noticing. Let me tell you a little bit about Nancy. Nancy was hardworking. She and her husband, a hardworking couple who were trying to raise their kids in the midst of sports and school and trying to get their kids through life. They were also managing pretty high-end jobs. Both of them had lots of pressure at work, lots of pressure at home, trying to get everything together. And they did a pretty good job of it. Both of them kind of felt like maybe, you know, their relationship had taken a little bit of a backseat, but both of them were really charged about their jobs and were thrilled with what was going on in their home life. Their kids were prospering. They were doing great in sports. They were doing great at school. Everything was going well. Well, Nancy had a good colleague at work. He was a good guy, who pretty much had a lot of the same values, was hard-driven, was kind of going up the same ladder that Nancy was. Nancy and he worked on a number of projects together. And those projects were excellent for the company. The company loved their work together and ended up putting them on more and more projects together. Well, in the midst of some of those projects, Nancy and this other person, Tom, began to have some conversations about what was going on in their lives, and they began to talk about all of the difficulties of rushing around at work, the stress of work, and then going home and really not even having time to spend much time with their spouse. And they had that conversation over and over, and soon both began to express the fact that they wanted more out of their marriage, but they just didn't feel like they could get it. And over time, they began to share more and more of life with each other. And over time, they began to share less and less of those moments of life with their spouse. And pretty soon, Nancy realized that she was really looking forward to those emails and those texts and those meetings. And soon, she and Tom ate lunch where they never even talked about their project. And that happened repeatedly, where they would make sure that they took their coffee breaks at the same time and met in the break room. And they made sure that their lunches were coordinated at the same time. And they kept telling themselves about how it was such amazing coincidence, so lucky that they found somebody that was so similar, that they had such a similarity of approach to life, approach to work, and they implicitly understood what was going on at the office. When things were going bad with management, they had that to talk about. They felt like they could rely on each other, trust each other, knowing that both of them just understood what was going on. They didn't have to tell anybody about what was going on at work. They didn't have to go home and tell a spouse about the frustrations of dealing with management. And they didn't have to hear their spouse kind of saying, hey, you know, you could always just quit. Instead, they could rely on each other for support. Well, that began a cycle where they began more and more banter about less and less work, and more about their dreams, their hopes, their expectations, their frustrations, their problems. And as they shared that more and more, it bonded them closer and closer together. Soon, Nancy would call Tom her best friend, and Tom would call Nancy his best friend. And they met more and more often, and then one day they ate dinner together. Now, dinner was a whole different situation. It was in a darkened place, and they sat close to each other and talked about what they hoped for the future. And those moments began to be very intimate. At one point, Nancy realized that something was not right. And the reason she realized it was because she realized she was holding more and more back from her husband. And she was afraid that her husband might think poorly of the conversation she was having with Tom, even though she was sure within herself that it was just a friendship. But she began to hide when the texts would come, and she began to hide when the emails would come, and she began to stop telling her husband when they had lunch together. She began to make excuses for why they had to have dinner together, or even stop telling him about that, and said she had to go to a business meeting. She had a business client, and she began to hide more and more. She put a passcode on her phone. She locked down her email account, and she began to dress differently when she knew she would be running into Tom. She spent a little more time on her outfit. She began to exercise more. She began to worry about how she would appear at work. She colored her hair, began to buy new clothes, things a little more form-fitting, a little tighter. And suddenly she realized that Tom was who she thought about. Tom was who she dreamed about. Tom had entered not just into her work life, but into her private life. And that had began to create more and more of a connection for her in ways that she knew were not appropriate for the fact that she was married. And she would have said happily married up until this point. She realized that her satisfaction with her relationship was beginning to falter. That she was beginning to wonder whether she perhaps had chosen the wrong person, that perhaps somebody more like Tom would have been somebody that she would see herself with. Over time, she realized that her dissatisfaction had something to do with the relationship and not with her life, that Tom's relationship had begun to poison the rest of her life, not because Tom was a bad guy, and not because they had ever crossed a line of a physical affair, but because the emotional energy involved was taking away from the rest of her life. Now, the story of Nancy and Tom, and Nancy's husband, is a very typical story for infidelity. My observation is very few people set out to have an emotional affair. Very few people set out to commit emotional infidelity. While there are plenty of people who might seek out a sexual relationship, a sexual affair, they are going for a physical relationship, there are many who find themselves in an emotional affair, committing emotional infidelity, that didn't see it coming, that didn't look for it, and that don't even know how to put a label on it. Now, many of those emotional affairs, many of those points of emotional infidelity, not showing fidelity to the primary relationship, do lead to physical affairs. Many physical affairs started with that emotional connection that then kept spiraling closer and closer until the inevitable physical affection happened. But not every emotional affair gets to that point. Sometimes people continue to rationalize and have boundaries on it and keep claiming it as a friendship, and a friendship is separate from a physical affair. But the power of that emotional connection is what we want to talk about today. Because that power of the emotional affair can wreck a relationship just as readily as a physical affair. In fact, I've often heard people say, "I wish it had just been a physical affair. I could recover from that more than the fact that these two shared their inmost lives with each other. These two shared the secrets of our relationship and the secrets of their life with each other and not with me, the spouse." So, what are some signs of emotional infidelity? The first one is secrecy. Emotional infidelity begins to cross a line when somebody begins to hide the communication they're having with the other person. Maybe they recognize that communication is too familiar, is not about whatever it started being about, whether it's the communication about work or communication about kids' activities or communication about some hobby. Whenever it begins to be done in secret, it's a sure sign that somebody is either trying to cover it up or is embarrassed about the level of it. And so one of the sure signs of emotional infidelity is when the communication is hidden from a spouse. It's another sign when the communication is about your relationship or hopes or dreams or problems. When people are in a work relationship, or when people are interested in a hobby together, or when people are involved in kids' activities together, the focus of the content is about that. The focus at work is about the work project at hand, or about the sales process, or something about work. Or if it's about a hobby, you know, if it's about two people who share a hobby, they might talk about the hints and ideas about how to do that hobby better or how to get resources for that hobby, and it focuses on that. Or people who are communicating about kids' activities, whether it's sporting or outside extracurricular activities, can focus on that activity and the kids in it. But when the communication begins to focus on the marital relationship, or one's inmost hopes and dreams or problems of life, it's begun to move away from an appropriate relationship and begun to cross into an inappropriate relationship. Another sign is flirtation. Now, there are many people who would say that, you know, flirtation is just a way of communicating with other people, but I would hold that flirtation always has a sexuality to it, a sexual level to it that really is pushing the bounds of a marriage. When a marriage is a promise to show a physical and emotional fidelity to someone else, by beginning to act in any sexual way with somebody else begins to create a pattern and begins to draw energy away from the marriage and to that other relationship. And so whenever flirtation enters into the communication patterns of two people, then that relationship outside of a marriage has begun to cheat on the marriage because that sexual energy belongs within the marriage. Another one is when there's an emotional charge to the communication. You know, when you're so happy to feel that messaging, that buzz come in on the phone of a text message, or you see that email, or you see that voicemail, or you see the phone ringing of that other person. When there is that kind of an emotional charge where you can feel the adrenaline surge, you can feel kind of the butterflies in your stomach, it's a sure sign that level of relationship has become contaminated. It's begun to cross a line of appropriateness because it's no longer just a neutral friendship. There's a place that it's tugging at you at attraction, a level of sexual attraction, of connection. And when it gives you that charge, it's a sure sign that something extra is going on there. Another internal sign is when you realize that you're dressing up, or you realize a spouse is dressing up more when those meetings are coming, when there are those encounters, when there's a possibility of that someone begins to be more worried about their appearance, because the appearance is about attraction. When you look forward to communication with elation, and when there is anxiety from a lack of communication, it's a very good sign that at some point you've become emotionally dependent upon that communication. And at that point, that the emotional energy is being drawn into that relationship and not allowed to be where it ought to be within the marriage. Let me reiterate right now one very important factor. These relationships that become contaminated are not intentional. They build over time until at some point it's begun to gain a life of its own and has begun to do one very dangerous thing. It's begun to draw emotional energy away from the primary relationship of marriage. You see, we only have so much emotional energy. There's just so much that we have in our life. And the question is where we're going to invest it. Where are we going to place that energy around us? There's no point when a marriage is going to hold 100% of your emotional energy. You might have book clubs or outside clubs or friends that you do hobbies with that get some of that emotional energy. The question is, when the energy is beginning to be drained away from the marriage that should be in the marriage, not that could be, but that should be in the marriage, and is being placed in other relationships. That's the danger point. It's not whether there is emotional energy outside of the marriage. That's always going to be true. But is there emotional energy that should be in the marriage that's being pulled outside of the marriage? That's a sure sign that there is a problem, that something else has contaminated this relationship. So the question is, where is my emotional energy, or where is my spouse's emotional energy getting invested? So let me be very clear here that the problem is not in friendships. There is not an issue with having friendships, but it's the level of sharing and the level of energy and investment in that relationship that makes that relationship dangerous. That when it begins to have another layer to it, where that begins to be the primary place of sharing, of energy, of investment of that emotional life, you know that it's beginning to drain away from the marriage where it should be and has become a contaminated relationship. Now, let me also make this very important point. If your spouse is in the midst of what you consider to be an inappropriate relationship, it is very hard to convince somebody that they are in or committing emotional infidelity, that they're involved in a contaminated relationship, partly because it kind of gathers steam so slowly, and that we tend to rationalize that connection is magical and it's just a friendship and it's amazing that we're so alike, but it's just a friendship and it's just a colleague, and we keep using rationalizations, not wanting to recognize that we've crossed the line, because nobody wants to hold that as a personal belief that, oh gosh, I am involved in a relationship that's inappropriate. Very few people seek out inappropriate relationships, and yet lots of people find themselves in it. And so it's very hard to convince somebody to see that relationship as being dangerous. It's harder to pull it apart because of the level of connection that's there, which is one of the reasons that we want to begin to manage those relationships around us before they're trouble. When we invest in our marital relationship and when we watch ourselves in outside relationships, we can begin to gauge, at what point am I getting too close to that line? At what point has friendship begun to be more than that? So here are some do's and don'ts for a spouse of somebody who is involved in what you believe is an inappropriate relationship. And now let me be clear here that there are times when there are some spouses that believe there should be no contact with anyone else. They should be the sole support and only connection point for a spouse. And I'm not talking about that. I want to be clear that that's not what I'm talking about. But there are some times when a spouse is much more tuned in to the fact that a spouse is becoming more and more distant, that there's less sharing emotionally, and that something is going on with some relationship. So here are some do's and don'ts of what to do. Do first, express concern early on. If you see that there is a beginning to be a pattern of connecting with this other person, express your concern early on, not calling it an affair, but just express your concern that person seems to be having a growing connection with your spouse. And you don't have to blame a spouse to point that out, that you can even say, wow, it seems like that person is really getting a lot of emotional connection with you. And that worries me because I want to have that emotional connection with you. The second do is to set expectations on what is okay to be shared. And again, this is something that's better done early than later. To have a rule early in your relationship that you're not going to talk about the problems in your relationship with outside people, at least not without the consent of a spouse. Because when things are getting tough, you might say, hey, you know what? This really is hard on me. This relationship is hard on me. Is it okay if I talk to my best friend about this? But to ask that permission rather than to assume it's going to be okay to talk about the marriage problems. Whenever we start talking and sharing relationship problems outside of marriage, we ought to be at least thinking, is this a safe way of doing it? Now, therapy can be a safe place to do it with a minister or, some other religious leader in our life. That can be a very useful way of doing it because it has safe boundaries, that's going to be held safely. But with a friend, particularly of the opposite sex, or a friend that might be of our persuasion, that can begin to be a very dangerous place to be. So set expectations on what is okay to be shared earlier, not later. The best time to do it is long before there's an issue. The next best time is now to say, you know what, I really am uncomfortable that you're sharing about our personal relationship issues. I would rather us keep that between us, or at least have it in a professional setting, whether it's with a therapist or with a minister or someone else. Another do is do ask to be included in communication, because if it's safe, that will be okay. If you say, hey, you know, I know y'all met for lunch. Could I meet with y'all for lunch? Can I go out with you for lunch? Can I meet with y'all when you have coffee? Can I go with dinner to dinner with you? Can we maybe meet outside the spouses, bring them in? Because when you bring spouses into that relationship, it can often help to reduce the risk of contamination, to reduce the risk that it's going to get too close, because suddenly everybody's a known commodity. Suddenly everybody is a little more safe with each other within that. So ask to be included in communication. If it's not okay, that will be refused. Now, there may be times, like if they're eating lunch to work on a work project, that's not appropriate. At which point you say, well, why don't we get together, the spouses get together, all four of us get together this weekend and have dinner together and just kind of get to know each other. And, you know, if it's such an important person to you, I would like to be a part of that. Again, if it's okay, that will find a way of happening. If it's not okay, that will show up too. Okay, so now some don'ts. Don't demand an end of communication. Because what you do when you demand it is you begin to create a defensive reaction on the part of your spouse. So don't demand it. That doesn't mean you can say, hey, can we put some boundaries on this? It's not okay at 11 o'clock at night for you guys to be texting back and forth. You might create some boundaries about when it's appropriate, but don't demand the end of communication. Remember, it's going to be very hard to get your spouse to admit that it's even inappropriate. So when you demand the end of communication, you will send it underground. There are so many ways of having communication now that can be secretive that's a losing ball game. So don't demand the end of communication. Ask for it to be made in appropriate ways. Also, don't try to convince or prove infidelity. Don't hold that up to them as a template. That's a very hard thing to do because, again, the rationalizations are there. But you can say, you know what, I'm a little worried about this. Have you ever thought about maybe looking at the warning signs for when a relationship is getting too close? This is not you playing the therapist to prove it. It's not you playing the kind of the judge and jury to commit them of having made that infidelity. But to say, could we at least look up some signs and symptoms of an emotional affair? Or could we at least look up some signs and symptoms of an inappropriate relationship? And that begins to be a little more reality testing for the person. But if you try to convince or prove, they will only be in reaction mode, proving you wrong, stating you're wrong, trying to make sure that label is kept as far as possible. Don't label it as an affair. That's a big one. Don't label it as an affair. State that the relationship seems too close. The affair is a very loaded term, and most of the people in the world are kind-hearted and loving and respectful people who do not want to be in an affair. And so they do not want to be accused of that. So you don't want to label it as that and create more reaction. Now, at this point, I'm really just talking about when it's emotional infidelity. It's a different matter when it's become physical. I just want to be clear that we're now talking just about those emotional moments of infidelity. Okay, so those are the do's and don'ts of a spouse. But what if you find yourself too close? Let's talk about the good, the better, and the best approach. A good way of doing it is to set very clear parameters for yourself on the contact. In other words, you're going to set some boundaries on when you're going to have contact, what you're going to do. So you might say, okay, we can't do meals together. That puts us too close. We're not going to text back and forth. I'm not going to respond to statements about how's your relationship or how their relationship is. I'm going to create some parameters for myself on that contact. And then choose not to engage in any flirtation or banter back and forth. Make sure that you take it to a new professional level. That's the good approach. Let's talk about the better approach. You bring your spouse into the relationship and agree to no conversations about the relationship issues, both with the spouse and with the other person. In other words, you're above board and say, you know what? I've realized I've shared too much in this, and I really, that's not fair to my spouse. It's not fair to my marriage. I need to not be sharing that with you. And so then you and this other person agree to support each other in you having a good relationship. In fact, if the other person is married, which is often the case, you commit to each other that you're both going to support each other to create a great marriage with the spouse, that you're going to do nothing that would get in the way of that. You're only going to support each other in that, and therefore you manage that relationship, encourage each other to turn to a spouse for that sharing of feelings and sharing of dreams and hopes. Now, recognize that you're breaking a habit, and that's very hard to do. And not only that, but you're breaking a place of feel good. You know, we have that place in our brain that gets that endorphin rush, that dopamine rush, when something hits our excitement button, and that relationship that you're involved may be doing that. And if you're getting your dopamine hit, your endorphin hit from that relationship, then it's going to feel kind of like you've given up your drug of choice. You know, you're going cold turkey on your coffee or whatever. And so you might be a little grumpy for a while, and just recognize that's a normal part of breaking the habit, because you've been getting the charge from an inappropriate place, and you have to figure out a different way of doing that within your relationship. So what's the best approach? The best is to break all communication and connection, to have no connection with this person, because when a relation has become contaminated, it is usually a risky one going forward. So the best thing is to say, you know what, we made a mistake, we got too close, and now we have to pay the price by saying we can't have a relationship together anymore. That's the best. Now, you might have to put some parameters on it, because you might have to say, well, at least outside of what's necessary for job. And then you have to be very clear that only those job connections. And so you may even say to a supervisor, hey, you know what? We need to not be working on these projects. You don't have to give a reason, but I'd rather work on projects with another person or find another way around that. And then you monitor your behavior. No meals together, no projects together, nothing that would allow for contamination. If you have to have a project lunch together, you bring a colleague with you that's going to keep it clean. If you have to meet together in certain places, you make sure that there's somebody else that's going to keep you clean, because all those levels of communication that happen, you know somewhere within you, that's not appropriate. And so if somebody else is watching, you won't be engaged in it. So the best is to break all communication. And that's hard to do, but it's kind of like going cold turkey. You get over the feelings and you get over the hurts a lot faster if you just say, I can't keep doing this, and you move through it. Okay, I hope today has given you a better way of thinking about emotional affairs. I know it's a very confusing topic. If you're worried about it, either for yourself or your spouse, it can be an overwhelming place because it's such a gray area. So hopefully we've put some light on that, shone some light on that, and given you some strategies on what to do going forward. If you've listened to this and you go, wow, you know what? I really realize that one of the things I need to do is strengthen my relationship, that there's something lacking there, and that this has caused even more threat to it, I'm going to invite you to do something. I'm going to invite you to grab my Save the Marriage system. That system is designed to rebuild the connection, to find a way of recognizing what a healthy marriage is and move towards that goal. You can find the Save the Marriage system just by going to savethemarriage.com, and that's going to give you lots of resources, lots of ways of really getting in there and learning how to really connect. Not only that, but I have a special program that you can find in that process of getting the system, where I will work with you directly and probably at a very different price range than you would imagine. And so if you're interested in that, please go to SaveTheMarriage.com and grab that system. And if you're interested in that extra piece of working with me, let me know. You can email me, Lee@SaveTheMarriage.com, and we can figure out how to make that work out for you. If this has been helpful for you, I would love it if you would share the word of this. I would love it if you would let other people know. Leaving an iTunes review, just by going to iTunes and searching for this podcast, and just leave a review. Let people know what you found that was useful. Or if you want to send out a tweet, that would be wonderful too. And it's easy to do. Just type into your browser, SaveTheMarriage.com/love. That's SaveTheMarriage.com/love. That will give you a pre-formulated tweet ready to go with a link in it to get people to back to listen to the link and get them right back to where they can hear this and other podcasts. I would love your support in that. It's always helpful if you spread the word. If you've gotten something out of this, I hope you'll take advantage and help us spread the word. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best in improving and saving your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.